Hey, fellow boundary breakers. If your current delegation systems are not working to get you out of the day-to-day in your business, there is an exercise on our website that is the first step to get you out of the delegation catch-22. I'm going to throw the link in the show notes for you to go ahead and download. What the mental load is, or what invisible labor is, means that women's role is the primary caretaker of the home and the children. I like to call this the default parent, which means that for anything needed from the home, from the family, defaults to the mom. And so this might look like the mom's phone number is on the school list as who to call first when you have a sick kid or there's an issue with a kid at school. The mom is always the one that's called because we are the default parent. Welcome to another episode of Female Founders Breaking Boundaries. I'm your host, Casey Gromer. I am the founder of She Suite Boutique. With over 20 years of marketing and business management experience, I work with small businesses and female founders using our signature business blueprint. On the show, you get tools, advice, resources, support, and encouragement that resonates with the modern businesswoman. So, fellow boundary breakers, let's dive in. I'm hitting record today on an episode that's going to be a doozy, ladies. Hello and welcome, fellow boundary breakers. You are listening to Female Founders Breaking Boundaries. This is the podcast that challenges you to embrace new ways of running your business where you are encouraged to achieve success on your own terms and build businesses that can run without you. I ran into a local listener today. I was running an errand and my office is above a retail store, which is super duper convenient. But this is a local listener. She's listened to every episode. So Katie Stumble of Wildflower Chocolates. Hello, if you are listening, and thank you for being such a loyal listener. Katie is expecting her third child, and she is due any day, so it was nice to run into her and catch up on life. Katie is the ideal listener for this podcast because she is running a business, she's balancing motherhood to three amazing kids who are at the same school that my kids are at, but she is still finding a way to make it all work. Katie is a chocolatier, and Wildflower Chocolates is located in Nisswa. And I asked Katie today about her plans for after the baby is born, and she said, I'm just going to be doing it. So she's juggling life with kids. She's juggling a new baby and loving on that little baby. And she's still finding the time to serve her customers and work on her business. And as women in business, this is all too often exactly what we have to do, exactly what's expected or required of us in order to achieve those dreams that we have. Katie's chocolates at Wildflower Chocolates, they are super amazing. And unfortunately, for those of you who are listening who are not local to our area, chocolate is just too hard to ship. But if you are ever in the Nisswa area, which even if you're not local, I highly recommend making a trip up here in the summertime. It is so beautiful. We are the land of 10,000 lakes. So if you plan to be in the area, you can stop in to Wildflower Chocolates at Nisswa. You can get yourself a sea salt caramel, one of her caramel s'mores, or her drinking chocolate bombs. And those are three of my favorites of the things that she makes, and there's so much more. Follow her on Instagram at Wildflower Chocolates, and you will be drooling, I promise. So as I said, this episode is a doozy from end to end. This particular episode, has been on my mind for years. It's been on my mind since I was in corporate America, and then again when my first child was born and I decided to leave corporate America, and it is still on my mind now as a business owner. So I don't know why it's taken me so long to record this episode, but here we are. Settle in, listener. I am so glad you are here. Before we get into it, a couple of housekeeping items. I have mentioned that we are close to being in the top 200 in Apple Podcasts. And when I was out the other day, I was perusing the new and noteworthy section because I have dreams of somebody showing up in that section. And I noticed there were only 2 women podcasters listed in new and noteworthy out of, like, I don't know, 25 podcasts. This was in the entrepreneur category, by the way. That is just unacceptable to me. This is another example of how women's voices are just not being heard in all of those places of leadership. So to help us out, to get more women in that new and noteworthy section, would you go out and leave a rating and review? Every time you download an episode, every time you click follow on the podcast, every time you leave a rating or a review, it helps our ratings and it gets us closer to being in that algorithm. One other housekeeping item is that I am going to start inviting guests to come on the show to talk to you as women in business about things that are really important to you about running a business as a woman. So I've opened up a suggestion form, and I would love to hear from you about what topics you want to have covered, if there's a particular guest that you think would be beneficial for others to hear from, and if there are any other female founders out there that you think deserve to get lifted up on the show. All right, so here we go. In this episode, we're going to be digging into systemic boundaries that hold women entrepreneurs back from achieving success. And the typical format for the podcast, which we are going to stick to today, is to celebrate and lift up another female founder. Then we will tackle this topic of the systemic boundaries, and we will close with some deep thoughts from yours truly. So today's female founder that we are lifting up is Eve Rodsky. Eve has this idea, or she talks about how women are shouldering 2/3 or more of all of the unpaid domestic work and all of the childcare for their homes and families. Eve has a bachelor's degree in anthropology, and she's also got her Juris Doctorate, which is in the legal field, and that's about all I can tell you about what that means, but she's got her Juris Doctorate from Harvard. So she is definitely a decorated woman. Eve has, after coming out of corporate work, I believe she worked for one of the big financial industries or financial employers, supporting them in their legal approach to the foundations that they have. But now she's gone private and she makes her living providing legal advice to families, also about certain foundations. And in this respect, we're talking about foundations where, you know, you start a foundation where we're doing fundraising and the foundations are supporting, you know, some sort of social effort or something of that effect. Eve is the author of a book called Fair Play. I just learned of this book today, so I have not read it yet, but I definitely have put it in my Amazon cart. Fair Play is a book that outlines Eve's revolutionary real-world solution to the problem of unpaid invisible work that women have shouldered for too long. So the invisible work in the family, she's going to talk about what that is, which we'll get to a little bit later in the show, and also how to make those changes effectively in a way that actually makes our relationships stronger and not necessarily breaks them down. In the book, there are 100 tasks in the marriage that she talks about how to divide those tasks fairly, which does not necessarily translate to equally. So I'm really excited to see what she has to say about that. I know it's going to make an impact in my own home. We're going to talk about Eve a little later in this episode. Actually, these particular topics are going to come up a few times in this episode. And then at the end, we're going to have some deep thoughts about what Eve is sharing with us. And it is time to get to the content. Today, I want us to reflect on and talk about and say out loud the systemic boundaries that hold women entrepreneurs back. Breaking boundaries is obviously my soapbox, And this episode is going to go into the key or the primary boundaries that I have uncovered over the years through my own experiences and through my own work with other women in business. And this is my soapbox because every single one of these women that I have come in contact with, either through my corporate career or my work consulting with women entrepreneurs, every single one of those women is amazing. They have amazing ideas. They're brilliant. They are at the top of the food chain in terms of their skills and abilities. But historically, these ideas that these women have, these skills and abilities, have been kept out of the mainstream. Primarily due to these boundaries or circumstances that are put into place in society that are not conducive to allowing women to carry out these big visions. Not only is this not fair, but it's a huge disservice to society. When you hear some of these ideas that these women have and you imagine the incredible changes that these ideas could make to our lives, to our communities, to the world, if they were to come to fruition, you would be passionate about this topic as well. So there are so many boundaries that I wasn't able to include in this, hopefully 30-minute episode, but I was able to narrow this down to 5 primary categories of boundaries that have either impacted me or the women that I support. The first boundary is one that I've talked about before, and the first boundary is the child care crisis. Now, as we're talking about the child care crisis, what we're talking about is the fact that families have trouble finding someone to help them care for their children so that one or both of the parents in the house can go out and do something besides care for the child or something besides housework. The reason that childcare has become a crisis in this country, and I don't think this is new. I know that the pandemic brought this childcare crisis back to the forefront, but I think it's been a crisis for many, many years, probably dating back to World War II and before. The childcare crisis has come about because the cost of childcare is expensive. So many families cannot afford childcare. And this is not just limited to low-income families. This is also something that impacts middle-income families as well. Because when you think of the cost of childcare, the cost of it in many cases is more than what one or both parents are able to make at their job. This is an issue even for middle-income families, and I can't imagine what low-income families or single parents or single moms would be dealing with when they're looking for affordable childcare. The other reason childcare is in a crisis right now is because it is really inaccessible. If you talk to any mother right now, in fact, when I was talking with Katie this morning of Wildflower Chocolates, she was sharing with me that there are no openings in our area for infant care, and any of these openings are not going to be coming up for many months because there is a limit on how many infants any childcare facility can take on based on the number of workers in that childcare facility. So whether it's private or if it's a facility. So families are waiting for months or driving way out of their way just to find access to childcare. Childcare is also notorious for having low quality care. And one of these reasons that we get so concerned about the quality of care our children are receiving is because the wages that are paid to these childcare workers are really not adequate. I don't even want to share with you how much the staff gets paid at the facility where my kids are spending the summer. It is eye-opening. And also, those working conditions for those staff are not sufficient. So for those staff centers, you have low wages, you have no benefits, and therefore you are attracting unqualified workers who are typically not that reliable. So on any given day, maybe somebody doesn't show up for work or they quit with no notice. And then in terms of private providers, if you're in a private in-home daycare, those workers are working super long hours, sometimes starting at 6 in the morning or before and working until 6 at night, and they rarely get days off. So they're working 5 days a week, 12 hours a day. Who else do you know in the workforce or in the labor force that works those hours? With no childcare, families are required to make accommodations for those children, and that typically means the women shoulder that responsibility. So the women are staying home. They are the ones that are giving up their dreams or their careers, and they are making up for that lack of childcare in that way so that the men or the husbands can go to work. Now, in 1912, this was something that came across my plate a couple of months ago. I hadn't realized this, but there is a federal program called the Children's Bureau, and it was established in 1912 to be watchdogs for child welfare. Now, I'm not going to go into any of the specifics about the Children's Bureau at this time. You can go out and look up information on that on your own. But something I hadn't realized was that, you know, during World War II, when the men were off at war and the women then were going to work in order to fill the gaps in labor and to be producing all of the supplies and the ammunition and the things that were required for us to battle overseas, the government stepped in at that time and there was federal funding for universal child care. So from what I can tell, again, not going into details on the podcast, but from what I can tell, this program was actually highly successful. But then what happened is as the men came back from the war, they wanted their old jobs back. And they actually, you know, some of the traditional approach was that, hey, we want our women to be back where they belong. And they belong in the home caring for the children. That's what everyone thought, everyone being men. That's what men felt was best for the children and families back in the day. So the program was disbanded. So that is our first boundary, is lack of access to childcare. I think it's a big one. And I think it's one that, I mean, it's not one that we can ignore. Now, the second boundary that holds women entrepreneurs back from being successful are these social norms of how women act, what they do, and also this mental load that we carry in our households and in our families. Now, mental load can also be referred to as invisible labor or cognitive labor, and many of you are already picturing exactly what I'm talking about here. What the mental load is, or what invisible labor is, means that women's role is the primary caretaker of the home and the children. I like to call this the default parent, which means that for anything needed from the home, from the family, defaults to the mom. And so this might look like the mom's phone number is on the school list as who to call first when you have a sick kid or there's an issue with a kid at school. The mom is always the one that's called because we are the default parent. So mental load, in addition to being the default parent, also involves all the thinking, the planning, the organizing, and the execution of not only the household activities, but we're also talking about all the doctor's appointments, the kids' camps, the school activities, the play dates, the meal planning and preparation. Those are the types of things that fall under the mental load because the women in the family are typically the ones who are thinking about those things. We are planning those things. We are organizing those things and we are executing those things. This mental load or this invisible labor is unpaid labor. And I saw something one time, I'm sure you've seen something similar, where if you list all of the things that women are responsible for in the home and equate them to a paid position, because there are people out there who do those things as a paid position, we would actually, just for our home activities, get paid something to the effect of $160,000 a year for those activities. And this is just outside of our regular work time. So this unpaid work is happening in the home, but it's also happening in other situations as well. You might, if you are working a 9-to-5 job, you might see this happening in the workplace where women are asked to take on more of the workload for not any extra pay. And this happens in volunteer situations as well. I'm sure you have seen that women volunteers are typically either asked to or stepping up more often to volunteer their time to nonprofit organizations and, you know, things like that. So who benefits from this idea of invisible labor? I'll give you one guess. It's the men. The men in our society are the ones who are benefiting from us as women taking on the mental load. So it cuts into our time to do anything outside of the home, our time to build a business or to have a career or to participate in hobbies or do things that bring us joy. Not only is this not fair, as I would like to say, but it also puts an undue mental and physical strain on the mom. I don't know about you, but I shoulder a lot of invisible labor and a lot of mental load in my house. And do you know what happens to me? I'm exhausted. I'm burnt out. It's easy for me to get depressed or feel unhappy. And I feel lost. I've talked about this in previous podcast episodes, but when I have this free time for myself to do something I enjoy, which doesn't happen very often, by the way, I've forgotten who I am. I've forgotten how to enjoy myself. I've forgotten the things that bring me joy. Now, how many times do you hear men say that they don't recognize who they are anymore or they don't know who they are? It might happen to them and they just don't voice it. But I have rarely heard men say that they experience that. So when we're exhausted and burnt out and depressed and unhappy, we have no energy to contribute in any other meaningful way, meaning that we are less likely to want to take on this idea of business ownership or entrepreneurship, because where are we going to find the time and where are we going to find the energy? The third boundary that holds women entrepreneurs back is the fact that in our society, we are grossly undervalued. Now, the obvious way that women are undervalued is based on wages. So if you look at the labor force, this is not a new statistic. This is kind of the basic equality, equity of women in labor. Women make, on average, still to this day, 70 cents on the dollar compared to their male counterparts. So that is, you know, one of the primary ways we see visually, tangibly, how women are undervalued. But some other not so obvious places that women are undervalued goes back to the previous boundary of this invisible labor, the cognitive labor, and the mental load. We are obviously undervalued there because not only do we not get paid for that time, but we rarely get recognized for it either. Now, men make more money than women traditionally. So therefore, there's this systemic idea that women need to pick up the slack at home because we're not contributing as much to the family finances. But when you think about it, men have jobs that support the family and men have jobs that pay more because of women, because what we're contributing at the home allows them to go out and do that. It allows them to spend more time at work. It allows them to have more mental capacity and not be multitasking or thinking or worrying about things that are happening at home. A lot of times men have this attitude, or even the women, even wives have this attitude or this belief system that because the men have the job that supports the family, then they don't need to help out at home or they shouldn't have to help out at home. These thought processes are what leads women to pursue less prominent careers or to hold back from starting their own business because, again, where are they going to find the time and where are they going to find the energy when there's no one to pick up the slack at home? There's a systemic belief that women's work and women's time is inherently less valuable than that of our male counterparts. There's a quote that I came across when I was doing a little bit of research for this episode, and it was not cited, so I don't know who to give credit for this quote, but the quote says, "The idea that men are in charge of their destinies while women are in charge of helping men retains a powerful cultural hold." I just want that to sink in for a minute. All right, the fourth boundary, ladies, is money mindset. Now, I'm not a big fan of the word mindset because I think it's very cliche, but I'm using this word today because I think it's going to resonate with you and I think you're going to understand what it means more so than if I used a different word. So money mindset is basically talking about our attitude around money. And women have a different attitude around money traditionally or generally speaking than men because we are more emotionally attached to this idea of money than men are. And to women, this money signifies our purchasing power. It signifies security and safety. And it also signifies our ability to care for the families. And generally speaking, women don't like to talk about money. This mindset really impacts our ability as women to find or secure funding and also to take financial risks. Women are more likely to feel uncomfortable asking for money, whether it's from the bank or from an investor or from our customers. And we feel uncomfortable asking for that money because we undervalue our worth. And this is kind of, again, linked to this idea that women are undervalued because we're doing all of this extra work that's not getting recognized and we're not getting paid for our invisible work. So we undervalue our worth. And this is evident when we look at some of the databases that are telling us that only 25% of women entrepreneurs actually seek funding for their ideas or to grow their businesses. And the women who do ask for that money are typically asking for 30% less than any of their male counterparts. And interestingly enough, since the majority of investors are men, it's kind of this vicious cycle of women are less likely to actually receive the money they're asking for than men because of this, you know, inherent belief that women are less capable than men. And now we're also asking for less money. This is a super systemic issue because men have traditionally always handled the money. So we as women are subconsciously taught that we don't know enough, that we aren't good enough, or we aren't worthy of managing money or of talking about money or of accepting money. I want to make it clear that not all women need funding in order to start a business. And in fact, it's not necessarily a bad thing to not accept funding. But in many cases, we are either unable to launch a business because we don't have startup capital or the time it takes us to grow to a significant size of a business or to create a business that's making a big enough impact takes a lot longer because we don't have the capital. Our money mindset is often holding us back from getting our ideas off the ground. Our final boundary that we're going to talk about today is a lack of support. And this lack of support takes many faces. One of the obvious lacks of support is this lack of support at home. So when we're shouldering all of the mental load at home, we're shouldering all of this invisible labor. We don't have time and we don't have energy to start a business. And frankly, our partners are not raising their hand in many cases and they're not stepping up to support us. The other place that we are lacking support is from a business perspective. So a survey of women entrepreneurs, 48% of them say that they don't have access to any mentors or advisors to help them start or grow or run their business. Men, in many cases, you know, a lot of these advisors are men because the men are the ones that are traditionally running businesses, going off to college for business. They have all of these business acumen. And women traditionally aren't getting those same types of education. And so women have no one they feel they can trust or no one they can turn to, or this advice or mentorship is unavailable. Now, one of the things I want to bring up in this situation is that a lot of times men are leaning on each other for support and for mentorship and advisorship. And what I'm seeing out there right now is for women to access the same type of mentorship or for women to access advisors, they have to cough up a lot of dough. I have been looking for support or mentorship or advisorship for women just as part of research and also for part of my own health and sanity. And what I'm finding is these networking programs or these coaching programs that are thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars. And so the only women who are able to access these programs where they have professional and qualified advisors, it's a very small group of women. And I find this disheartening. And I also find this discouraging because I would like to see more women supporting each other without having to put a monetary price tag on that. And speaking of supporting each other and finding networks without a monetary price tag, we're talking about smaller support networks. Our support network is really about who you know. And one of the things that comes to mind for me is the Good Old Boys Network. And I talk about that a lot because a lot of times when you're looking at how did so-and-so achieve that so quickly, or how did so-and-so get connected to that person? How did so-and-so get that promotion? Because, you know, either that person is no more qualified than I am, right? And a lot of times this is happening because of who you know. And so we've always talked about the Good Old Boys Network because the Good Old Boys Network is where men are recommending other men or helping other men who are in their network or who they know. And so it's like this incestuous relationship with your buddy system. But women don't necessarily have that type of network, especially because there is not as many of us in the field of business. And also, when you're thinking back to this invisible labor and this mental load, women aren't as free to go to these networking events or to find networking groups or to expand our network by meeting people in places that might require travel or events or other things of that nature. And also, many of these connections that we need to further us in business are men who are predispositioned to help or network with other men. So these smaller support networks are often holding us back because we aren't in the know. We don't know the people we need to know to catapult us into our next level or our next level of success. So ladies, what are we going to do about this? I don't know about you, but I'm not willing to simply sit back and accept this. So what I want to talk about in the podcast today in relation to all of these systemic boundaries that are in some ways outside of our control and in other ways not. I want to talk about how we can not only break these boundaries, but move past them and also to work with what we have. So here are some ideas I want to share with you on how you can and how She Suite Boutique is supporting women in taking small, simple steps to break these boundaries. And we want to do this for as many women entrepreneurs as possible. These are systemic issues. They are not going to be resolved overnight. And so what that means is we simultaneously have to be working to break these boundaries and to fix these systemic issues, but we also have to work in the systems that exist today. And how are we going to do that? Well, one thing that we as women entrepreneurs need to consider is flexibility. And so if you're thinking about traditional businesses who are working 9 to 5, men are going off to work and they are focusing 100% on the job while they're in the office, they're not worrying about childcare, they're not worrying about meal planning. And this is just not possible for women right now. And so what we need when we're thinking about running a business is more flexibility. And this flexibility gives us a little bit more freedom to do the multitasking that we are accustomed to doing. So we're thinking about business, but we're also thinking about the kids, and we're also thinking about the meal plans. So flexibility in business means that we are probably going to be setting up businesses that work non-traditional hours. It's just not realistic for us to be committed to a 9-to-5 all the time, because there are times that we're going to have to do other things with relation to dentist appointments for the kids and driving kids to camp, and the kids got sick, we got to go pick them up from school, and all of those household mental load, the household labor that falls on our shoulders. We're not going to be able to change the childcare crisis overnight. So we're not going to be able to expect that there always is going to be someone there to take care of our kids. And so we're doing this flexible thing where we're working when we can. We might be working earlier in the morning. We might be working later at night, and we might be working in chunks. One of the ways that's helpful in setting up these non-traditional work hours that are more flexible is thinking about virtual and remote work. We simply cannot be chained to a desk 9-to-5 every single day. I mean, we can. There's a lot of women out there that do it, but as entrepreneurs and moms, it's a lot harder for us to do that because we don't have that access to that childcare. So there are so many tools available to us today that make it possible for us to work when we're not sitting behind a desk. And we need to be able to use these tools to make it possible for us to work in the morning, or work at our lunch hour, or leave the office in the middle of the day, or work on the go or at odd hours. And what I'm finding as I'm working with women is that a lot of us are gravitating towards certain types of businesses that allow for flexibility. 40% of businesses that are started today are women. And one of the reasons I think this is happening is because the traditional 9-to-5 is just not doable for us anymore. And so when we're thinking about starting businesses, we are looking for businesses that are going to accommodate for the same reasons that we left the corporate world. And those businesses that are more flexible are typically e-commerce. Running an e-commerce boutique, or selling toys or inventions or subscriptions, or selling anything online is the ultimate of flexibility, because you don't need to be sitting in the office to run the business, and you don't need to be sitting in the office to make sales. It can all happen online, and you can build virtual teams, and it's very conducive to flexibility. Service-based businesses are also really popular with women, because if you're running a service-based business, in many cases, you can either do consulting that's virtual. A lot of women are running agencies, like marketing agencies, or if you do have an in-person service-based business, you have more flexibility to control your own schedule, so you can control when you are taking appointments, what days you're in the office, and those types of things. Now, another tool that we are using at She Suite, and you can use too, to combat these boundaries, is to get really smart and really efficient with your business operations. If your business operations are running efficiently, this means that you're going to be working less hours, but also making similar income, because your business is going to run like a well-oiled machine. You're going to be solving less fires. You're going to be spending less time solving issues and dealing with stuff that's going wrong or stuff that's not planned. So business operations helps you combat all the distractions that are coming at you, the fatigue and the multitasking that so many of us are doing in our businesses. To get your business operations set up like a well-oiled machine, you've got to focus on planning. So many of us as women are not spending or taking the time to create a plan, and also systematizing. Systematizing is time-consuming, but it's necessary. And once it's set up, it's set up for the long haul. And when you've got things running on a plan with a system, it helps you and it helps your team stay focused, and you can spend less time at the work and more time in your daily life and your outside priorities. Organizational structure is another tool we have to help us break those boundaries. And what I mean by organizational structure is how your business and your team operates together. So just like we are at home, many women entrepreneurs are the default, or the one in the business. They are the go-to for problem solving. They are the go-to for removing boundaries. They are dealing with the issues. They are wearing all the hats. Now, in organizational structure, you have to take some time and take some tiny steps to get yourself to a position where you can ask for help in certain areas where you cannot manage anymore, or in certain areas where it's not a unique ability for you, which means it's not something that you're inherently good at. So if you're trying to do things that don't come naturally to you, you're spending a lot of time at it, you're making lots of mistakes, and it's zapping energy from you that you can't afford to spend. So you need to ask for help. And not only do you need to ask for help, but you also have to know how to hold those helpers accountable for their part. I see that so often where women are asking for help and they're bringing in help and the help is not doing what they were hired to do, or they're not contributing in some way, and we sort of just let it slide for way too long. Now, we already talked about delegating, and we talked about delegating what's not a unique ability for you and why that's important, because you don't want to be wasting a lot of time trying to figure out how to do something that's going to take you three times as long as someone else who that is their unique ability. The other thing we can do with our organizational structure that I see happening a lot now, but it probably could happen a lot more, is using part-time and temporary help. So we don't necessarily need to hire full-time employees to help us out, especially if we are on a lower budget. So we want to think about who we can bring in on a lower budget, but is going to make the highest impact. And so when you think about those people who are going to make the highest impact in your business, you're going to start with a low budget. You're going to make a high impact. And then as that impact is made, the business is going to grow. And so you're choosing people to bring in that are going to help you grow the business. And as the business grows, you can hire more people, or you can afford more things, or you can bring on more people. And a lot of times I see women bringing on full-time employees and expecting them to be a jack of all trades. And in some cases, this is the right move. But in many cases, what happens is you bring in somebody and they're working, 8 hours a day for you, but they're doing so many different things. And a lot of those things, they're not necessarily good at. And so what happens is, while a lot of things are getting taken off of your plate, they are not getting done well and therefore not growing the business. So it's almost a waste of money. And so we work with women to talk about how to build these teams and how to know when is the right time to hire a part-time person or a temporary person. And instead of hiring one person to work with you for 8 hours a day, what if you hired three people and each of them gave you 2 hours a day and they were all operating in their own area of unique ability? And what that's going to do is advance your business or grow your business in those particular areas a lot faster and a lot more efficiently if you are structuring it that way. Financial strategy is another tool that I think is grossly underutilized when it comes to breaking these boundaries. Going back to one of the boundaries we talked about with money mindset, this has zero to do with mindset and more about understanding your finances. So a lot of women think understanding your finances means bringing on a bookkeeper or getting someone to handle your accounting. And while that is important, we have to know how to look at those finances or look at that accounting and how to use it to make decisions. And so some of the things I don't see women doing in their business is understanding their budgets. Like, a budget? What's that? Or knowing how to create a forecast so that you can predict what's going to happen in the future. Another thing forecasts help you do is to create scenarios where you can plug different scenarios in and help you see how it's going to impact your finances long term, so that you can look at what's this invest, like, do I need to invest in some new equipment? How is that going to affect my finances in 1 month, in 3 months, in 12 months? What about hiring a new person? How is that going to affect my finances down the road? And can I afford it? So forecasting is the result of having a set of good books. And we as women, because we have this money mindset of not wanting to talk about finances or look at finances, or we don't find it interesting, we're not doing these activities and we're not prepared for knowing what decisions to make in our business. We're not prepared for what could possibly happen down the road if our budgets fall or if our budgets are increased. We have no cushions in our business to deal with those negative things that might possibly happen. We have no backup plan. So let's get started looking at financial strategy and taking those books from our bookkeeper and understanding how to use them to make those good financial decisions. The final tool I'm going to share with you today that I think is really powerful in helping us break down those entrepreneurial boundaries is this CEO mindset. And I want you to rethink the CEO mindset. The CEO mindset is this idea that because I run a business, I am the boss. I am the CEO. I have to have my hands in all the things. I have to make all the decisions. I have to know everything that's happening in the business at any given time, because if I don't, my business will fail and everybody will fall off the rails. This is not true. I want you to rethink that role. We as women entrepreneurs, we do not have capacity to add any more mental load or any more invisible labor to our already full plates. We are already overwhelmed and we are already burnt out. So by rethinking this idea that you are the one in your business and you are also the default at home is just going to lead to further burnout and, you know, further failure to succeed, I guess you could call it. The idea that if you aren't the one in your business means that it's not your business anymore, that is not true. It is still your business, even if you are not, quote, the boss. Now, if you have, as a business owner, if you have a strong vision, if you have strong values, and you have a really buttoned up business strategy, that's really all you need to build a business that can run without you. You can build a business where people can come in and support you and know exactly what you're about, know exactly what direction you're headed, and know exactly what their part is and what they're accountable for in getting you to the next level. So this gives you permission to embrace. Sometimes I say the wrong words on the podcast and I don't notice it until I'm listening back to the podcast after it's published. And I'm like, oh my God, did I really say that? So anyway, we are trying to embrace your unique ability, which we talked about before. What your unique ability is your innate ability, something that comes naturally to you. That's what your focus should be on in your business. So you need to know what that is so that you can fill the gaps in the other areas of the business, the things that don't come to you naturally. So this is going to allow you to spend time on what you love so your business is filling you up and not draining you. And then it's also going to allow you to delegate the rest, which frees up your time so that you're able to not only have a successful business, run a successful business, enjoy your business, but you can also work on changing this idea that you are the default at home. Because we're not here to change your home life. I'm not qualified to do that, but I can change your business life. To wrap this up, we are not going to change the world overnight, ladies. I know this. I am a realist, but this entire business was founded on the idea that any simple and small step is a positive step. It's a step in the right direction. Any simple, small step is making an impact. I want you to not give up. Don't give up. We need you. The world needs you. My daughter needs you to do your part in this systemic issue. Please know that these boundaries are systemic, and that means it's not our fault. These are systems and structures that were put into place by people who didn't have our best interests in mind, and for good reason. And it's a system that is a disadvantage to us. So until we have more women's voices in places of leadership to make this change, it will never change. And so every simple and small step we can take is a step in the right direction of putting more women's voices in places of leadership. And I think of Ruth Bader Ginsburg's comment, I'm sure you've heard before, about how her work is going to be done when there are 9 women sitting on the Supreme Court. And people are flabbergasted by that because there's 9 seats on the Supreme Court. But Ruth says, but it's always been 9 men. And no one ever blinked an eye about that. And that's where we ultimately need to get to, ladies, is where it's a non-issue to have women in leadership. We don't even think about it. If every single Fortune 500 company has a woman as a CEO, let's not even blink. All right. So I'm wrapping up today with some deep thoughts, and it's coming directly from Eve Rodsky, who we talked about earlier in the episode. I heard her on a podcast this morning. The podcast is called No One's Coming to Save Us. This episode is only 17 minutes long, and it's one of the most powerful episodes I've listened to in a long time. So go have a listen. No One's Coming to Save Us. I can't remember what episode it was, but it's the most recent one that was released. Anyway, I heard Eve Rodsky this morning, and her topic is so timely. I feel like it's the universe talking to me, because this topic directly related to the episode that I'm recording today. And so I couldn't wait to talk about what she shared in this episode. She said that when we think about what systemic gender bias looks like in the home, it's the same thing that we talked about earlier in the episode. This looks like women being the default for every single household task. And she shared that we have, as a society, we have consciously chosen to build our society on the backs of women's unpaid labor. And this means men have relied on women and the unpaid labor of women to get where they are today. And this is so true. I think this was just like a pet project of hers, but she referenced this database that she made. And this database was collecting all of these items of invisible work that women are doing day to day in our households. And this database ended up being like 2,000 items. And I'd love to get my hands on this database, because she'd also assigned hours worth of work to each of those tasks. And I think it would be so interesting, because it's not something we think about. We are on autopilot doing all of these things, and we don't think about how long we spend chasing our children around trying to get them to put on sunscreen. Eve also talked about how the expectations between how men and women are supposed to use our time are different. And I want to share an example that she gave in the podcast of asking women, like, how did mustard end up in your fridge? And I think about this all the time. Like when I get to the grocery store and I come home and I find out that we're out of peanut butter, and I'm like, why didn't anybody tell me we were out of peanut butter? I did not use the last of the peanut butter. I had no idea we were out of peanut butter. So in this particular example that Eve shares, she asked the woman, how did mustard end up in your fridge? And the woman says, well, because little Joey likes French's yellow mustard on his sandwich or whatever, blah, blah, blah. And then what happens is, if she sends the husband to the store to buy the mustard, the husband comes back with spicy Dijon mustard every goddamn time. And she said, this woman was like, how can I trust this man to do anything? How can I trust him with my life? He can't even buy the right stinking mustard. And this is true in my own house. And one of the concepts that Eve shared with us, I was so interested in. And I think I've got to do more thinking about this, because what she shared is that in our household, we as women are part of the problem, because we don't give men, our husbands, our significant others, the psychological safety to fail. If they fail at something that they try to help us do, they're ostracized. I mean, we really beat them down. I know this is true in my own house. I know I catch myself doing this all the time. So one of her suggestions was that we need to give men full ownership. And full ownership means that they have ownership over something from start to end. And one of the examples she gave of that in this podcast episode was the tooth fairy. And so if you give the dad the full ownership of the tooth fairy, he's 100% responsible for knowing when the tooth falls out, and then putting, I hope your kids aren't listening. Okay, you know, spoiler alert, we're talking about tooth fairy here. So if the money doesn't get under the pillow at night, then traditionally what I would have done, and what this example talked about, is how the women would get really mad at the husband. In the idea of the men owning the full process of the tooth fairy is like, oops, he messed up. So now he's got to figure out how to fix it. And in this particular example, you'll have to go listen to it. He did great. And, you know, as women, we make mistakes too. We have to allow our husbands, our dads, we have to allow the men in our lives to take ownership of these things and make their mistakes and go ahead and fix it. It's not the end of the world. So I'm going to go and try this in my own house. One of the other things I wanted to talk about that was mentioned in the podcast is how are we as women, how are we to recognize when this systemic gender bias is happening in our own homes? And if you have ever said, I mean, this really hit home because these are like daily conversations in my house, whether they're happening out loud or they're happening in my head, they're happening daily. So if you've ever said either out loud or in your head, because my job is more flexible, I'm the one that does XYZ, or because I get paid less than I do XYZ, or because I'm wired differently and that's why I do XYZ, or because he's better at focusing on just one task and I'm better at multitasking, that's why I do XYZ, or maybe you've said I can find the time and he can't find the time and that's why I do XYZ. Ladies, it's bullshit. This is totally not true. We are part of the problem when we allow this to happen in our homes. And we are, what's the word I'm looking for when you're in like this codependent relationship? We are enablers. That's the word I'm looking for. We are enablers in this situation. These things are just not true. So what do I believe about this issue and the systemic gender bias and these boundaries that are just happening subconsciously in our lives? We are living in a system designed by men to benefit men. And this is not their fault, ladies. They created this system, and at the time it was created, things were different, and now they've changed. However, this change obviously falls largely on our shoulders because men are not supposed to, and how can they possibly represent us in their own system that they've created? They can't. They're not in our shoes. They're not in our situation. They've never experienced what we've experienced. So it's our responsibility to represent us, but we can't do it without the collaboration and compromise from those willing male counterparts. So we need to find those male counterparts. We need to hold our own partners accountable. And I also want to talk a little bit about universal childcare because it comes up for me so often. Universal childcare is something we should be fighting for as a society. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not waxing political here, and I don't always believe in government-funded programs. In fact, I rarely believe in government-funded programs. But in this case, this is one government-funded program that I can really get behind because when I do the research on and I sit and think about the massive positive impacts to everyone involved, not just me as a mom, and not just families, and not just kids, but our economy, our workforce, the companies who benefit from this, we all benefit from universal childcare, and it's definitely something that I am going to be pushing for. We are wrapping up a super long episode here, and I want to invite you into a discovery call. There are so many ways that we can help you, ladies, break boundaries. So let's hop on a discovery call and see what solution is going to make an impact for you. Let's connect on LinkedIn or Instagram. I would love to hear your thoughts on this episode. Did it touch you the way that it touched me? And if there's any episode that's going to spark you to leave a rating or review, I think it's going to be this one. So would you go out on Apple Podcasts and leave a rating and review so other women can find this episode too? Honey, what is it that you wanted to tell our listeners today?
Get out there and break some boundaries and do it for me and my generation.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Female Founders Breaking Boundaries. If you enjoyed this episode, would you be willing to leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're tuning in? You can connect with me on LinkedIn using the link in the show notes. And until next week, don't be afraid to get out there and break some boundaries.